Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, March 22nd, 2009. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. Let me repeat, 646-652-4620. You can email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you're listening to a rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. I encourage you also to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and the two's a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on ContraryInvestorsCafe.com. And this evening, we are so pleased to have Dr. Michael Beitler as our guest. Dr. Beitler is a leading spokesman for libertarianism, host of Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler on Voice of America Business Network, and author of Rational Individualism, a Moral Argument for Limited Government and Strategic Organization Change, which is required reading in MBA programs worldwide. Join us tonight by calling 646-652-4620. And I believe he's on the line right now. Dr. Beitler, is that you?
Yes. Good evening, Joe.
Good evening. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be our guest this evening. We are honored and privileged. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my honor. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much for those kind words. Well, we are really excited here that you are going to be on our program. Actually, I feel somewhat akin to you because some of the things that you have been doing are things that I did when I was a little bit younger, and I suspect I'm just a few years older than you are. Now, there are probably the infinite number of subjects that we can cover. I'd like to start with maybe an unusual question, if you don't mind.
Okay,
here it is.
Okay, I'm game.
No, this is not a trick question at all, believe me.
Okay. Oh, I trust you, Joe. I know libertarians are brothers, so I trust
right.
you.
But I am having such difficulty connecting, because I attempted this and I found it to be an arduous task, connecting libertarianism, libertarian philosophy and practice and whatever, you know, even in a practical manner, in a practical world, you know, and speaking to the business community. You know, as I wrote to you in the email, I actually have a registered trademark as America's foremost corporate exorcist. And so we were really on the same path. I guess you and I talked about the same, at least philosophically the same. I found that to be extremely difficult to get across. And I'd love to hear how you do that, what approach you take, and what type of successes you've had, and what have been your responses to that.
Joe, that is a great question because, actually, as you mentioned, I have a radio show myself, and initially the show was called Pro-Business, and I changed the name to Free Markets because Pro-Business had kind of a bad feel to it after a while because of all the cronyism that's going on. You have
right.
big government in bed with politicians and bureaucrats, and you're bringing up a really good question, Joe, because some of the people who abuse, you know, the free market kind of concepts we're talking about are the business people themselves. You know, they're sending lobbyists to Washington and, really they're just looking for laws and regulations to crush the competition. They're not free marketers at all, which was a real surprise to me, I think, at one point.
Well, what approach do you take when you present yourself, your ideology, your ideas, your practice to the business community? What type of approach do you use?
Okay, so I guess my approach would be when I'm making presentations to a group, you know, I'm presenting the principles to people, and for the most part, as you and I both know, you know, most business people are, you know, they're not using the, you know, the government the way I just indicated. So, I mean, the people, I think, are open to it, but a lot of what you talk about on your show, Joe, and I talk about in my approach, is I think people have just become lazy and ignorant as to what the government's telling them. So I try to point out, you know, the consequences of some of these programs that are being suggested. You know, for an example, when I was talking to a group just recently, I talked about, wouldn't it be nice if we had very low interest rates? How about zero interest rates? And everybody's nodding and saying, yeah, that would be great. But then I sort of talk about, well, what are the consequences of that?
Right.
You know, you're distorting prices in the marketplace, and people misallocate assets, and they take on too much debt. And so I guess my answer to your question, Joe, is, you know, I try to point out what the consequences of some of this thinking is.
All right. Do you find that your audience, in a sense, is a hostile audience?
You know, that's an interesting point, Joe, because I also teach in a business school at the University of North Carolina, and I'm surprised to see so many young people open to it. You know, I had Jeff Frazee on, who was the on my show. He's the executive director of Young Americans for Liberty, one of Ron Paul's groups.
Right.
And as you well know, Ron Paul stirred up, you know, millions of young people and got them excited.
Correct.
About his campaign.
Right.
So I'm encouraged when I'm talking to young people. You know, they've been raised on a lot of the socialist status kind of stuff, but they're still open. I guess what is a little bit concerning to me, and I'll go back to your age and mine, Ron, Joe. You know, I'm 55, and I assume you're a baby boomer like I am.
I'm a lot older than you.
Okay,
but you have to understand that I have a 15-year-old mind, but I never grew up. This is my real problem. But go ahead. I digress.
Well, that's another issue we can talk about. But I guess what I'm most concerned about, or bothers me the most, Joe, is when I'm talking to business people our age who should know better. I mean, we can remember the 60s and how we were anti-government. We
right.
didn't believe anything the government told us. And now we're at this place where the government is going to save us from a financial meltdown, which I believe they created in the first place.
Correct.
I think, and those people do tend to be more hostile because they're looking at me like, well, you know, Mike, don't you like poor people? And I'm saying I believe in charity and mutual aid and so forth, as long as it's not coerced. You know, I don't want it at the point of a gun.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was invited to speak a couple of years ago, University of Tulsa, to an entrepreneurial class, and I'm not certain if it was part of their undergraduate or their master's program, but the students absolutely loved it. They loved the conversation. They loved the dialogue. I will never be invited back.
Isn't that interesting?
If you looked at the expression on the professore on his face, he wanted me
really?
Out of
that.
Oh, he wanted me out so badly. I mean, when that door shut, I said it's the last time I'll ever get invited. And was the last time, but it was over 2 years ago, actually, 2-3 years ago or so. And I will never get invited back, and I never was. Not that I did anything wrong. But what I professed in practicality was not what he was teaching. And it was very contradictory, and he was very, very uncomfortable with me there. Very interesting.
Interesting. It's interesting to me, Joe, because, you know, as I said, I teach at a university myself in a business school, and you would think libertarian principles would be taught there, but as you well know, you know, the business schools are socialist, statist as well,
right.
And, you know, I keep my politics out of the classroom, which I think is an ethical issue, but, you know, some of my socialist colleagues don't mind, you know, bringing that, their rhetoric to the classroom.
Yeah. Well, I think it was somewhat my practicality because, you know, I've started my own businesses and I was like most people, you know, you have successes and you have tremendous failures and you learn from them. And I think from what I recall, I opened up Mike by saying, and they all had their business plans out for me to review for some reason. I don't know, I wasn't going to review, but, you know, and I couldn't. There was too many students there. I said, you all have your business plans in front of you. They said, yes. I said, isn't that great? I said, you have your business plan in front of you, right? This is the first day on the job. You go into your office and the phone rings. Who's on the other side? And they all looked at me and they go, we don't know. I said, but how does that fit into your business plan? The professor went nuts. I mean, he was like, get this guy out of here. He's destroying me. He's destroying the whole pattern that we have. And anyway, but I'm digressing, and I'm just curious because you do speak, a lot of what you do is that you give workshops, you speak in front of business audiences and whatever, and you have books that are used in MBA programs, and I was just curious of your approach.
I think my experience is probably similar to yours. The libertarian message, I think, plays well with the young people. It's kind of a mixed bag with the business people, and then with the academic types, oh my gosh, they're absolutely hostile toward it.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, this program is your program. I'm sorry, I may have digressed altogether, so I apologize for that. I want you to take over and tell me what you think is going on today, and give me all of the solutions so I'll know exactly what to do, and our listeners know exactly what to do.
Okay.
Well, we'll start off with an easy question.
Yeah, I guess there's so many issues, Joe. We'll just do a coin toss and come up with something here. As you know, Joe, you know, before I became the professor type, I came out of banking. And, you know, one thing I do in a lot of my speaking is talk about the financial meltdown, the financial crisis. And one thing I could share, Joe, with your listeners is an experience when I was in banking. I remember being the chief financial officer and sitting around a conference table with the chief operating officer and a chief executive officer and a couple of regulators. And this is one of these things you can never forget. I remember the regulators had a stack of loan files in front of them, and they said to us, you have to make these loans. And I remember the chief operating officer next to me, now he has about 25 years of experience, and he said, well, we've already decided we're not going to make those because they're quote-unquote marginal loans.
Right.
So you can imagine where this is going.
Yes.
So he's basically pushing these files back across the table, and the regulators are saying, no, you have to make these, you know, through your CRA compliance, the Community Reinvestment Act compliance. And the three of us officers are sitting there thinking, my gosh, we're responsible for the stockholders' money here. And they're basically telling us you have to make these loans. And the way they had pressure to do that, these were the same regulators who were doing the audit for FDIC purposes. So in other words, they had the power to take the eagle off our door,
right?
Meaning that our deposits wouldn't be insured. So when I tell that to some groups, they look at me like, oh, come on, there wasn't that kind of pressure. But there was, and that was how this whole financial crisis got started.
Right.
You know, you have to make these loans. And then to make it even worse, Joe, you know, to make the story even longer and make it even sadder, is They look back across the table at us three executives who were now stunned about this, and they said, but don't worry about it. You know, you originate the loans, sell these to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, you keep the origination fee, you keep servicing fees throughout the life of the loan, and the risk gets transferred to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
And they actually voiced that.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there and
I'm
thinking,
unbelievable.
Well, you know, as a bank executive, I had this moral dilemma. You know, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, okay, so my stockholders are protected because I'm transferring the risk to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, but who is ultimately going to end up with this when the music stops playing? And that's going to be what we have now, it's the taxpayer. And this was 20 years ago, so you can imagine, Joe, with hundreds of banks generating mortgage loans and selling them into Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, and or securitizing them, which is a little bit more technical, but it's basically the same thing. The taxpayer is on the hook.
That's
my first.
Well, we never hear the politicians, though, blaming anyone other than the Wall Street and the greedy bankers. Government is never part of that equation.
You're absolutely right. And I've heard you preaching that on your show, that, you know, the government doesn't take the responsibility. And I'm not quoting you directly on this, but they're basically saying, you know, we're doing this all for the good of the people and we're here to protect you and so forth. But, you know, that as you have said on your show, they're really just trying to get votes, you know, with the Fed pushing down interest rates to ridiculously low levels and, you know, all these other insane programs like minimum wage programs. And it's crazy because it's all fantasy. And sooner or later, it's going to collapse.
Well, it's nice to hear that firsthand. And let's take just 1 second out for station identification. Folks, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. We have as our guest this evening Dr. Michael Beitler. And we are going to discuss this evening some of the current events and possibly how we got there and maybe a solution or two. Well, we're in this mess. Is it as bad as we hear on television or we hear on the popular media, or is it different?
Let me do this, Joe. I talked about this on my show about a week ago, and I got several emails that basically said, "Hey, Mike, will you run that by me one more time? I'm not sure I got it." But basically what I was telling my audience was, when you look at what's happening with the banks, it's almost unimaginable that their equity has been wiped out. And I told them part of the problem is this whole mark-to-market thing, mark-to-market accounting. And if you don't mind, Joe, I'll put on my CPA cap for a minute, but I promise not to be boring.
Well, this is your program. Go to it.
Okay. So if I can talk as a CPA for a minute, and again,
sure.
I can talk about a 20-year history of this whole mark-to-market accounting regulation thing that you're talking about. Basically, what happened, Joe, was there was a time when all accountants said, we're going to stick with the going concern principle. So whenever you buy an investment or a piece of equipment or a pickup truck or whatever, you carry it on your books at cost. And we won't worry about fluctuations in market price because you're not planning on selling it anyway.
Right.
So it's the going concern principle. And then, you know, obviously you have now people finagling that and saying, okay, well, we have some bad investments that we've made. As long as we don't sell them, we don't have to take the loss and run them through our income statement. So there was some finagling and manipulation going on there. So they came along with this mark-to-market accounting idea. Okay, well, you have to take all those investments and mark them to market. But then the problem that we ran into now is that with some of these derivative products, there's a very thin market. There's very few people bidding on it. So they're saying, well, you know, we can only get 20 cents on the dollar for the investment, so we have to mark the thing down dramatically. Mm. And you can imagine what's going to happen. That's just going to crush, you know, the banks that hold a lot of these instruments. So what FASB is finally considering now, FASB is the Financial Accounting Standards Board, they're saying, well, when there's a very thin market or no market for these instruments, it doesn't make sense to mark them to market what will allow you to do from here on is look at what the present value of the cash flows. And as long as it's current and it's making payments, you can use that. So long story short, what I'm saying there, Joe, is instead of marking those assets down to 20 cents on the dollar, maybe have to mark them down to 70 or 80 cents on the dollar.
Right, that's what I always thought, right, yeah.
Yeah, you can see where I'm going with that.
That
means when you get it, you know, you get that higher valuation for those assets. Now, you know, Citicorp doesn't look like it's worth 50 cents a share anymore.
Right. Well,
so I think that's a big issue that our libertarian free market, you know, friends ought to be aware of.
Mike, we have a caller. Could you just hold a second? Let's get this caller. He's been holding for some time. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure.
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please, and your comments or question.
Yes, my name is Jim. Do you want me to go ahead with my question?
Surely. Go ahead, Jim. Thank you very much for calling.
All right, let me mute this. I'm listening to you live here, so let me. Dr. Bettler.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah,
how you doing,
guys?
Jim? Just call me Mike. Call me Mike, Jim.
Mike, I was looking at your... Googled you, and I'm really, really impressed with your resume and how you work within. You recognize the interconnection between business economy and politics. They're really inseparable. How they affect each other. And I'm just wondering, as a
thanks, Jim. I appreciate that.
Well, if you look at them as separate silos, you're missing. You know, I recognize you're missing some important correlations between the three.
Oh, that's a great point.
And my question is, as a I'm a self-employed small business owner, and I primarily sell and service the small business market. Employees, companies that have employees, typically between 50 and 500 employees, and. Even the economy in Oklahoma is starting to, you know, just starting to feel the stress of the recession, and there's a lot of worry, and people are starting to, you know, be very more cautious in every business decision. What would, in light of the current economic conditions, and I realize that from a consultant's point of view, you would want to know the details of each individual client before making such recommendations, but just in general. What type of advice would you give small business owners in today's economic climate to help ensure that they can survive this this difficult period that we may be going through for a prolonged period, and even maybe thrive and capitalize on opportunities from what we're going through? Is there some general trends and advice that you would suggest the small business owner that's very worried about? Making payroll and meeting their debt obligations and keeping the doors open.
Yeah, Jim, that's a great question. So I would assume. So Jim, I guess tell me a little bit about your clients. Are they in a particular industry or different?
No, they're not. And it's something that I know from reading some of your materials. You're familiar with. I'm a strategic business partner for for an employee assessment company, and for both pre-employment as well as performance improvement, talent management, and almost any team building, etc. So the solutions that I offer, Mike, can be applicable to any type of company. So I have service, manufacturing, it covers the full spectrum. Of type of clients that I work with, but I generally find that the niche that I'm best suited for tends to be in that 50 to 500. I have clients larger and smaller, but that seems to be kind of the sweet spot for my market.
Yeah, I guess what comes to my mind there, Jim, is I think you're actually in a pretty good position. You know, and I'm happy to say, one of my colleagues came to me the other day and said, well, you know, Mike, what's happened to your consulting business? I guess it's dried up. And I was happy to report I've got more consulting work now than ever because a number of companies have downsized. And, every time they want to do anything now, they don't have the talent in-house.
Right.
So they're going outside to find it. So I guess when I hear you saying, Jim, when you're talking about doing assessments, you know, let's make a guess here that a number of companies in Oklahoma have downsized and laid off their HR types. I would think you'd have an opportunity there to, you know, work as the, you know, the independent. You know, they're not making the long-term commitment and, you know, paying health care for you and all that kind of stuff. I would think you'd be in a pretty good position.
And I feel that where my business has suffered some, obviously, on the pre-employment side, some of the leadership development, talent management issues. Companies are needing solutions, and as you know, payroll and benefits is typically the largest line item expense in most businesses. So I didn't want this to be so much a advice. I think I recognize the challenges and issues that my little business has, but I try to be a problem solver and help companies and hear about their challenges beyond the solutions in the world that I work in. And just wondering, just more from a macro level, as to if there's, in light of the trends, if there's some survival tactics and general advice that you would give the worried business owners today.
Yeah, I guess what I would say, Jim, and it sounds like you're already doing it, you're thinking about how to add value, and I guess the only, you know, little bit I'd add to that would be, you know, if you can be narrow and deep, you know, and these employers know, you know, what exactly you bring. Like you were saying, you don't do maybe so much the pre-employment. You can move away from that now and then move into, you know, leadership development, you know, especially if they're still talking about promoting from within. But then I guess, Jim, you know, your bigger question there, I think, again, for, you know, the small business person, if they can have this narrow, deep, clearly defined specialty about how they add value, you know, staying lean and mean during the, you know, the downturn. I think there are opportunities here, you know, with the bigger companies in trouble where you can actually build your market share.
Yeah. I think you're right. With businesses whose sales are sluggish, unless they dominate the market. Most companies that have 2, 5, 10% of the market that are crying about their business is down. Look at the market share that you don't have.
And great.
There's always opportunities, and so I try to put on a happy face and stay away from the doom and gloom mentality, because I do a lot of reading and research, and I'm sure not to the extent that you do, but as you know, there's a lot of things to be terribly concerned about the direction of our country and our economy.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say, too, Jim, you know, get in touch with me. I've got a good friend in Southern Virginia, not far from here. You know, she specializes in assessments, too, like you do, and she's doing pretty well. Maybe you two could hook up and exchange some, you know, business model ideas.
I will be sure to contact you via email here in the coming days.
Yeah, please do, Jim.
I appreciate that. Thanks for your response.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
All right, great talking to you.
Jim, thank you. Thank you for calling in, Jim.
Thank you, Jeff. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, there we go.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, these are all really tough questions. I mean, there are no such thing as easy questions these days, you know.
that's true.
What major principle – well, let me do this. We're time for station identification. Again, folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Let's hear from you. We have as our guest this evening Dr. Michael Beitler, and we are going to talk about he's a spokesman for libertarianism and a businessman, a business planner, business consultant, you name it, he does it. And he's also the author of a couple of books, and we'll be probably talking about that in a minute. Mike, how do you approach it? What principles do you espouse when you speak to, well, either the business community or other than the business community, regarding the true free enterprise? What approach do you take?
Joe, that's an interesting question, too, because when I speak to groups, I think when they see, you know, well, he's going to be talking about limited government and capitalism, I think they they are guessing, okay, well, here's another guy who's going to tell us about how great things are in Hong Kong and why West Germany is better than East Germany and, you know, South Korea is better than North Korea. There's real practical kind of examples for capitalism, which are all true. But what I try to do, Joe, and I think it's a surprise, especially to the business audience, is, as I say, you know, let's talk about the moral issues.
Okay.
You know, is it moral for the government to take by force, you know, money from people who have earned it, and given it, and then give it to people who haven't earned it? And as you and I know, I mean, we're usually talking about this is just to gain votes with special interest groups and so forth. But I think that approach is helpful because we don't ever talk about the moral issues about what's going on with socialism.
That's very interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because people consider, you know, being a progressive as being the good guy, being morally correct, when that's the immoral position to take.
Right.
And it's very difficult to turn that boat around, isn't it?
It really is. And I guess it's a bit odd for me to say this as a business person, but I really came to libertarianism through Ayn Rand's work.
Uh-huh.
And as you well know, Ayn Rand's a novelist and
a
philosopher. And you would probably think, well, you know, Mike, I don't imagine you talked about that much in business school. No, we didn't. So, but I found her arguments to be, you know, absolutely, you just couldn't refute them. I mean, they were just so solid and philosophically based that I think when I present them now to audiences, it's very hard for anybody to push back and say, well, wait a minute, capitalism is immoral. No, actually, it's the only moral system for politics and economics that we have. The rest of them are the ones that are immoral.
Where do you place the blame? For example, I place some of the blame in the school system that we have. The way what we teach elementary school kids all the way up, where we don't emphasize the civics any longer. We don't even emphasize home economics. Anything that makes us self-reliant, independent, the way we used to be, you know, and what government was designed to do in the first place. Where do you? Oh, we have another call. You want to hold on a second? Let's see what our call has to say.
Sure.
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please, and your question or comment. Thank you very much for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello,
this is Pat.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Your first name and your question, please.
Hello, I'm Pat. I'm also from Tulsa. I was interested when the doctor spoke of the morality that government seems to overlook right now, and it struck me that one of the strongest current issues in business and in particular health-related businesses is the issue of ethics, not only in my field but in other medical fields. All the conventions now hold ethics training and ethics classes, and that just seems quite such a contradiction that the government seems to overlook not only the ethics but the morality and everything that they seem to be proposing at this time, and I'd like to comment on that.
Excellent point. Yeah, what do you think, Mike?
It is an interesting point. Well, hello, Pat. I'm Mike. And yeah, great point. So, Pat, are you working in the healthcare industry?
Yes, actually, I am in private practice.
Interesting.
I'm an audiologist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. I mean, it is interesting that we're talking about ethics, but when we come to economics or how things are going to be, you know, how things get paid, you're making a great point. I mean, we just, you know, ethics and moral issues just go out the window at that point.
Well, certainly they seem to for the government.
It's true. And I guess what are your thoughts then, Pat? Are you concerned about more and more of the pressure for, you know, nationalizing the healthcare system?
Well, I am. I've never felt that that was the way that this country should go. And I feel that even more strongly after watching videos of how the healthcare system in Canada and some of the other, some of the Scandinavian countries also are working at the present date. Apparently they're not as efficient as they once were, and people are starting to see the holes in that system and, you know, perhaps wish that it were different. I don't want to see America go into, I don't want to see the United States go into that hole. Not to mention the fact that it would also probably present quite an issue for private practice, well, practitioners such as myself.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, we'll have to talk, Pat, because I got to get somebody like you onto my show to talk about, you know, when I hear about, you know, socialized medicine in Canada and the Scandinavian countries, somehow it sounds good, but then the stories I'm hearing from people in those countries are just nightmares. You know, people waiting for, you know, months for critical attention and coming across the American border to, you know, after they've already paid in Canada, you know, to come across the American border and then, you know, to get critical attention that they need.
Exactly. Well, I wondered what you thought about the, particularly the government's apparent viewpoint towards the morality and the ethics in doing, you know, making those kinds of changes and those kinds of steps, because I don't see that it's such a great deal, even for individuals.
Right.
I mean, of course, you know, it's touted to be wonderful for low-income people who can't afford their own protection in the field of health. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, well, yeah, you're right there in Tulsa, which I think, you know, you and Joe are in the same town, so I'm sure you've heard Joe say on his show that, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Joe, but I think I've heard you say something to the effect of, you know, you can't really expect the politicians to do the right thing. They're going to do the thing that gets them the votes.
Yeah, well, so, they have to do the correct political thing, which is not the correct...
Right.
If it's by coincidence that it may be the right thing or the economic or the efficient thing to do. It's just coincidence, but typically it's not.
Yeah, so I think what I think that the issue here, Pat, is, you know, it's going to have to get back to the voters, you know, and I guess people like the three of us are going to have to get the message out that there's a moral issue here, you know, and we're not going to vote for candidates who, you know, support these things. Mm-hmm. And again, Joe has mentioned on a show about, you know, there are some candidates like Ron Paul, and there are libertarian candidates, not a lot of them, But I think the issue that you're bringing up, Pat, is really important, because I think, you know, as voters, you know, we need to, you know, not only vote that way, but on a regular basis be talking about, you know, these things are immoral that they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the question, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thank you, Pat.
Bye.
Thank you for calling. Now, Mike... when you speak to people, do people and do you tell them that you're a libertarian? And if you do, do they expect the alien to come out of your chest and start eating the people in the front row?
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe. It's hard to imagine sometimes what these people are thinking when I say that I'm a libertarian, or I'm you know, in the introduction. Somebody says I'm a libertarian, and I look around the audience, I'm thinking, I guess you're expecting some, you know, gun-toting redneck, you know, or something. But so I guess there are, like, these stereotypes we have to overcome. But again, I think, you know, and you notice as well as I do, I think the rationality, you know, the reason in the, and the solid arguments that we have are really hard to refute.
Right.
So if we just put them out there, and I bet you've had this experience too, Joe, if I'm talking to somebody on the far left or maybe even the far right, you know, when I present the principles, the, you know, the issues, the arguments, sometimes they're just so frustrated that they have nothing left but an emotional outburst.
Right.
Because they can't rationally refute what we're saying.
Yeah, the response that I get, Mike, is that, oh, technically you're correct, but it really doesn't work that way. And that's their out. You're correct. I agree with you, but it really doesn't work that way. And I don't know where you go with that. I don't know how to answer that. And because you have all the dots move, you know, so you can't connect them because they're always moving. And they agree with you, but they won't stay there. They say, I agree with you, but we're going to discard the agreement. And now I'm going to tell you that basically nothing really works that way, although I agree with you and I don't understand. And it's a self-contradicting statement, and I don't know how to handle that.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because I guess what I try to do is I guess I won't let them off the hook with that because, you know, they're basically saying, they agree in principle, but in practice it doesn't work. I guess I just keep coming after them and saying, okay, so we should be moral in theory, but immoral in practice,
right? Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, and that's what they're saying. They say, but it really doesn't work that way. You know, we understand that government is inefficient and it's fraudulent and it's unconstitutional. But we need it anyway. You know, but we need the intervention. And I don't know where you go with that. I don't know where to go with that. I go, well, thank you for agreeing with me and then walking out and not changing your mind.
Right.
I find that extremely frustrating. I wish they would just say, no, you're crazy, and here's the three reasons why you're nuts. But they don't do that. They agree with me, and it's like ending the... It's like someone saying, I did it because God told me to. You know, and then where do you go with that? Don't argue with me.
Right.
Argue with God, you know, and let's go for coffee.
Right.
You know, I don't know where to go for that, you know.
Oh. They're not looking for a rational debate.
Well, Mike, what are you discussing? What are the latest issues that you're discussing on your radio program these days?
Well, you know, something related to what you just said, Joe. I had Mike Munger on my show Thursday morning.
Huh?
He's the chair of political science at Duke University. Hmm. You know, so this guy's a very reputable kind of character. Mike Munger ran for governor in North Carolina as a libertarian.
Yeah,
he was polling 5-7%, which is pretty respectable.
It is.
Ended up, it really is, and he ended up with about 2.7%, you know, in a respectable third place.
Right.
So when he was on the show, I said, so Mike, are you going to run again next time? And he said, oh, absolutely, because, you know, if libertarians can consistently get just 5% of the vote,
right,
and I think this is related to what you were saying earlier, suddenly we have some political clout. You can't ignore us anymore.
That's correct. Yeah,
5% could be that could be the difference in an election. So they can't just blow off our issues and say, well, that's fringe kind of stuff. You know, we don't have to listen to that. They're going to have to address that if they want to, you know, take some of our 5% to get that, you know, that ultimate power that they want as, you know, whatever that elected position is. So I think what Mike was driving at was actually encouraging to me because, you know, very often I hear this, and I know you hear it too, well, why should I vote libertarian? I'm just wasting my vote. But what he was saying is we're not wasting our vote at all. You know, we need to vote, get that 5% or more, and you know, and have some influence on the political process.
All right, let's take another station break, folks. This is, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're pleased to have with us as our guest, Dr. Michael Beitler. He is a spokesman for libertarianism. He's a host of the host for Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler on the Voice America Business Network and author of Rational Individualism, A Moral Argument for Limited Government, as well as Strategic Organizational Change, which is required reading in MBA programs worldwide. I'd like you to join us this evening and call 646-652-4444. 4620 with your questions or comments. Thank you. Okay, Mike, where do we go from here? I'm going to throw the hot potato right back at you, okay? I've asked enough questions. I don't want to steer this too much in a skewed direction, so I'll leave it up to you. And, of course, I want this program to benefit you as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, a couple things I would talk about, you know, squeezing here in the last few minutes is, you know, I do think, you know, as I was saying, Mike Munger, my buddy over there at Duke, was making a good point that, you know, we have the potential to have more political clout, you know, if we're just, you know, concentrate on being true to the cause. A couple other things I'm thinking about here, you know, some of the latest things I've been talking about on my own show, of course, is about some of these bailouts. And, you know, probably like you, I've gotten incredible amounts of email on this. But I think my thought on that, Joe, is with the bailouts, it's not just that we're bailing out Wall Street and Detroit, but now everybody's in line for some kind of a bailout.
Right.
Their home mortgage, and you know, next will be their car loan and credit card. And my big concern there, again, is that we're creating this moral hazard.
Right.
You know, we're showing people that, and this is back to what you said earlier, Joe. I mean, we have stopped teaching about self-responsibility in the schools. You know, we've become a society of whiners and complainers. You know, what happens at a rugged individualism?
Right, right.
And I'm sure you're as concerned about that as well.
Yeah. Well, your book, Rational Individualism, I guess that's the focus of your book, right, I assume?
Yeah, it really is, because I'm trying to, you know, get back to, you know, I think it's funny, too, Joe, because when I talk about individualism, you know, people... I think some people are looking at me like it's, well, that's about some kind of self-centered, you know, me. But I'm not really saying that at all. I mean, as a rational individualist, you know, I had to be thinking in terms of, you know, nobody's responsible for me. So when I go out into the world, what value do I bring? You know, can I trade with somebody else and they profit and I profit? There's no government coercion. I think that you know, again, back to what you were saying earlier, Joe, I mean, that's something we need to be teaching in schools.
Right.
You know, you should be thinking rationally, you know, not living in a fantasy world where interest rates are zero and everybody, you know, needs a $750,000 home, nothing down. And it's fantasy. So we really need to get back to schools and, you know, and discussions everywhere else, you know, just getting people to think rationally and taking self-responsibility, you know, the things that the country was built on.
Right. Do you have opportunity to speak to high school students?
I have not talked much to high school students. It's mostly college students. Do you do much of that, Joe?
No, I don't, and I'd love to. I could make myself available, but I'm unavailable most of the time. But let me put it this way. I could make myself available to do that, but I would have to promote it in order to, you know, and I don't. You know, but I'd love to.
Right.
I love to go to high schools. I love speaking to young students because I love playing with their minds. You know, because whatever they say, I have a ball with young kids. I always do. I just have a lot of fun with them, and they enjoy that. And I'm not even nice to them, but they know that it's all done in jest. And I don't know how I do that, but I do that. My wife says, you should do that all the time. I said, it's too much work. But I really love to speak to young students, you know. Anyway, but I don't want to go there. But I didn't know whether or not you had that opportunity, but I would love to do that.
I haven't been doing it at the high school level. I mean, I'm glad you brought it up. I guess I haven't even really thought about it. But I do speak to a number of different universities and colleges where I get to speak with young people. I'm like you. I like talking to the young people. And I like to shock them a little bit and challenge them. And I think they like it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
I think they're open to it.
Yeah. It seems to me the older the person, obviously, the more difficult it is to have a conversation. The more reluctant people are really to listen, generally speaking. And so the younger, and I guess really our focus, if we had to structure a total libertarian movement, in my opinion, we should all of us should be speaking to high school students, and we should everyone else ride. I mean, that's where our bread and butter is, because these people are going to grow up and they have to think that way, and if we get to them too late, there's not much we can do. I mean, the job is that much more difficult.
I think that's a great point, Joe. And as I mentioned earlier, I had Jeff Frazee come on from Young Americans for Liberty, Ron Paul's group, and I just think he did a terrific job on my show. And then when you go to their website, they've got chapters in high schools and colleges, in all 50 states, and they're just doing a great job. On my show, I try to encourage my baby boomer friends, come on, man, send them $50 or something, and let's help these young people out.
Do you have any demographics on your show? Do you have many young people listening to your show? Do you know, or do you think it's all just? Are you preaching to the choir? Sometimes I feel like I'm always preaching to the choir.
That is a good question, and I'm making myself a note here. I'm going to ask my executive producer for that because I think he's got stats on that. We'll have to share that and find out. Who's listening? But off the top of my head, Joe, I'm afraid I don't know.
Yes, I don't know either. See, I don't get any demographics on mine. No one says, I'm 17-year-old and I'm listening to you, so I really don't know. But the people who call in are relatively young on the show.
Yeah.
They are relatively young. And most of my email are from people who are less than 30 years old, younger than 30 years old.
Very interesting.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Yeah.
The call is
encouraging. Yeah.
And I find that encouraging. I'm sorry. I stepped on your words. I'm sorry, Mike.
No. I was just saying amen. That's very encouraging. That's great.
And I only say that because you can tell by their voice inflection that they're relatively young. I mean, I don't ask them how old they are, but you can... you can surmise that they're not old like me. They don't have one foot in the grave. They're still finding their way around, which I think is kind of interesting. Well, Mike, we have about four more minutes to go, and I'd like to give this time to you so that you can tell our listening audience about you, a little bit more about yourself, where they can find you, and to promote anything that you'd like to. Okay, go to it.
Okay. I guess I can give you a quick little life story here. I spent 30 years, I guess it's more than 30 years now, in the business world. And along with consulting and writing, I've been working as a business professor the last 12 years at the University of North Carolina. Started out publishing business books, as you indicated, Joe. My strategic organizational change book is used around the world in classrooms, MBA classrooms. That's real encouraging. Now, there's nothing in there for your libertarians, but if they're interested in organizational change, I think they'd find that interesting. And then, let me say something, too, about my radio show. You mentioned that it's called Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, and it's on the Voice America Business Network. It's on Thursday mornings, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern. Probably the easiest way to get there is just to go through my website, mike@mikebeitler.com, Beitler's BEITLER.com.
Okay.
And there's a free markets page on there. And I've got, and like your show, Joe, I've got all my shows archived.
Right.
So, you're not just listening to me. There's a lot of great guests I've had on. So, hopefully that's a resource for all the libertarian free market thinkers out there.
Great. Well, okay, Mike. Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. We had a couple of callers with a couple of interesting questions, and I think they were very pleased that that you were available to answer those questions for them. I want to say that I'm just pleased as punch that you took the time out to be our guest. What I'd love for you to do, if you can send me to the email address that you've been using, if you can send me a mailing address plus your T-shirt size, I will ensure that you will get an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt.
Oh,
fair enough?
That'd be great.
Okay.
Joe, let me tell your listeners, I think you have done a wonderful job now for like 2.5 years. That is an awful lot of work.
But thank you very much. I appreciate it. Well, not as much as you have, though, Mike. I mean, I'm light duty compared to you, but thank you very much for those kind words.
No.
I appreciate it.
You've done a great job, Joe. You've got to stay in touch.
Okay, that's a promise then, okay?
Oh, that's good. Okay,
all right.
Joe.
All right, good night. Thank you very much. Good night.
Okay, good night, Joe.
Wow, that was kind of neat. That's an interesting perspective from someone who has to address the business community. Now, folks, let me tell you something. I had, in my other life, addressed the business community. They are tough. They are very, very, very tough. I mean, they think bottom line, and someday I'll do a show on some of the questions that were posed to me. And I shouldn't say they were questions, as they were comments that were posed to me when I spoke to the business community, and I'd love to share with you what my responses were. And some of those responses will shock you. They would truly shock the heck out of you because they would be not what you would expect. Sometimes I would wonder whether or not I would get back to my car in the parking lot after the speaking engagement. I always felt I was going to get mugged afterwards. That was the resistance that I received. And I applaud Mike in the work that he is doing because, let me tell you, it sounds easy. It is very, very, very tough. And we absolutely appreciate the fact that he took the time with us this evening to be our guest. Okay. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. Your ride is controlled, and that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, and that'll be Thursday morning, 6:30, we'll go live again. I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.